right, it's another Wednesday night, and you are in the zone here on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Dave and Glass with you again on another Wednesday night, and we got a big one tonight as we got a lot going on here in the next several days, including tonight's bucket matchup on the hardwood. I don't know. I guess we don't have a trophy for that in basketball, but we go to Purdue at 9 o'clock tonight on the Big Ten Network, and we'll talk about that here in just a few minutes. Got high school basketball this Saturday. We'll tell you more about that here in a little while, but of course, the big football game is Sunday, and we'll have it here for you almost all day long on Sunday, Super Bowl Sunday, number 49, Seattle and New England. Our coverage begins for you at 2 o'clock. Kickoff is usually a little after 6 or so. For the Super Bowl. So again, we'll have a big day of football for you on Sunday. And we'll give you our thoughts and predictions for the Super Bowl here in just a little while. But first, again, the Hoosiers of Tom Crean head up to West Lafayette. Already there, of course, but they play tonight 9 o'clock for the rivalry game against Purdue, coming off the loss at Ohio State over the weekend. And a big game tonight, I think, for Hoosier fans, maybe more than the prospects of placing for the team, because I think Hoosier fans want to see that this team isn't falling back into some of the funks we've seen this team fall into on the defensive end, maybe not so great on the rebounding end, maybe on the offensive end not moving as well, and not the super sexy offense we saw against Maryland. So it's a big game, I think, for Hoosier fans, certainly tonight. Before we go too far, let's go ahead and bring in our friend Jay. How you doing, Jay?
I'm wonderful, gentlemen. How are you?
Doing all right. Looking forward to tonight.
You? What's happening?
Not much. What I see more than anything with this game is who can handle the ebbs and flows. And that's what I've noticed a lot this season. It's not necessarily been which team is more talented. It's which teams can sustain a run or which teams can handle the run and punch back. And that's what I think was missing at Ohio State. If you remember that game, Indiana started out real hot, went 8-for-8, I believe. They got into a little bit of a funk in the second half. Ohio State got it rolling, and that counterpunch just never really came. I don't think it was a lack of talent. I think they got a little sloppy with the ball a lot in that game. But outside of that, I think it was just, it was a heavyweight match, and unfortunately, George Foreman was doing a lot better than, you know, Hagler was at that time, and Hagler just wasn't counterpunching.
Well, I think you nailed it in your first statement, Jay. You've seen this team play a lot of good basketball, and they've also had some minutes where it's been rough basketball. And the first 7 minutes of that game, they hit their first 8 shots. I think they had, what, 1 turnover, 2 turnovers maybe? And then the next 11 minutes, they had 8 made baskets total and 8 or 9 turnovers. So you can't on the road, when there is no crowd to pick you up, when there is no experience on that court, with the exception of Yogi Ferrell, who's been through those tough situations to pull the team out. He can't do it by himself. And that's maybe, I don't want to say a weakness of this team, but it's not one of the stronger points. You haven't seen really the great dominant 40-minute effort, and I don't think that team is ready for that yet, because I don't think they have the pieces to do so. And when you rely on the jump shooting as much as Indiana does, and how often sometimes they don't get to the free throw line, throw in those turnovers, and yeah, it's kind of a tough road back. Remember, like you mentioned, Indiana got off to that great start, and it felt like the Maryland game again, because Ohio State was just hanging around. They weren't really doing anything, and the next thing you know, it's 25-19 Ohio State, and then Ohio State doesn't score for 5 minutes from the 9:40-something mark to the 5:30-something mark, or somewhere in between there, and Indiana just gets 6 points in 5 minutes to tie the game, so they didn't swing it back. The Illinois game would be the counterbalance to that, and the Nebraska game as well on the road, because you had those big runs each way. I mean, Indiana withstood a 21-2 run at Illinois, but the problem was Illinois had one guy who was hot, and if he didn't score, the Hoosiers kind of outflanked them on that day. But as you saw with Ohio State, they had plenty of guys that could attack Indiana and get after Indiana.
Well, I think what scares me more than anything is a team like Ohio State, where what Indiana can do that a lot of other teams can't do is they can get you with their speed and their guard play.
Yeah, and Ohio State had no problem covering that up.
Right. So why I'm not too afraid of this game is like, when I saw Hammond as a freshman, I was like, oh, my God, this guy is a beast. He's an ex-Odin. He's just going to kill
them. He's going to dominate people. Yeah.
And he just hasn't progressed into that player. So maybe this is being a little bit of a homer, but I'm not afraid of him. I'm not afraid of their two big men. What I'm more fearful of is, can their guard play match our guard play? And if it can't, which I don't think it can, Indiana should win this game by at least 10 points. If we're sloppy with the ball and we allow their guards to play higher than their ability, then we have no chance.
Jay, thanks for the phone call.
Good
we
stuff,
appreciate
Jay.
It,
get it
as
off.
Always. 333-2665 is a phone number. That right there, I mean, that's... You know, that's the matchup. I mean, that's the intrigue of this particular game. Indiana in a whole has been playing better basketball right now than Purdue. Their inside game that we keep saying is a weakness for Indiana on the Purdue side, maybe they can exploit it, but those guys have been all over the map inside. It's not like that's a huge strength for them. They just happen to have 2 7-foot big guys that are pretty dangerous, at least, but they've been all over the map themselves. I mean, Haas was starting for a while because Hammonds was, you know, in the tank for a little while. Now Hammonds is back in it, and we don't know where Haas is.
The other thing you have to look at is they don't play those two often together side by side. It's kind of a platoon system in all of that. And if you leave the big fellas in for Purdue or the big fella in for Purdue, they have someone to protect the rim. Is Indiana going to settle for jump shots? If they can handle Purdue's quickness on the perimeter, do they settle for jumpers? Do they take the ball in and try to attack Haas, or do they try to attack Hammonds? That's going to be the interesting thing, because I think you saw against Ohio State, and Jay hit the nail on the head, Ohio State had plenty of guys to guard us on the perimeter.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't a lot of breakdown off the dribble. The three-man weave didn't cross the free throw line extended in a handful of possessions in that game, and probably closer to two handfuls of possessions. So when it doesn't work, where does Indiana go? And do you settle for jump shots? I think good shots you always settle for, because you got guys that can make them. That's not the big deal. But would Indiana and Tom Crean, and I'm beating this into the ground, but it's true, when Indiana plays through the paint, and when you've got a 7'1", 300-pound guy in there and a 7'1", 285-pound guy in there, that's not always easy to do, but you can get him in foul trouble. And then that forces Purdue to go small. And you've seen some teams, Ohio State was one of them, that maybe play a little bit better when they're smaller. I'm not sure if that's Purdue's way or not. Here's what I know about Purdue. They defend. They're really good defensively. They're a pretty solid rebounding team, and that's where they're at right now. So it's their defense versus Indiana's offense. That's what makes it a very interesting matchup for tonight. And I don't think there's going to be one factor that does this. What does Indiana do well? When they balance their scoring and get a lot of points, they're hard to guard. So if they're going to have 4 guys that can score the basketball, 5 guys that can score the basketball, that's what makes Indiana good. Their pressure comes from their offense, not their defense. And what makes the Boilermakers good? Protecting the rim, grabbing rebounds, and getting the easy shots on offense.
It's a rivalry game, as we all know it, and there's some intriguing matchups, and we'll delve a little bit deeper into a little bit of that when we get back from the break. 333-2665 is our phone number. Dave and Glass with you in the Zone. All right, you're back in the Zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. While we've got you here, we've got an announcement related to, hopefully, to IU and certainly to college basketball here for WGCL. Some big news. We're going to have a whole bunch of the NCAA tournament broadcast right here. In fact,
All of it.
Every single game, including a 3-hour Westwood One special on Selection Show Sunday. So tons and tons of it. The coverage starts here on Thursday, March 9th at noon. And it will continue all the way until the national championship game, which is Monday, April 6th. So looking forward to a whole lot of basketball here on the airwaves on WGCL as we just continue to ramp up the sports programming for you. And hopefully you enjoy it as much as we do. 333-2665 is a phone number. The basketball Hoosiers head up to Purdue tonight for an intriguing matchup on both ends of the court. The 2 7-footers for Purdue against the 6'6" Colin Hartman, I suppose. And let's not put it all on Colin Hartman, but of course he mans the inside and has been a matchup nightmare. Other teams have had to react to it, and Thad Matta finally did it best with Jaylon Tate and some inside game, or Jayshon Tate, I should say, and some inside game and outside game there for Ohio State. It's intriguing, of course. Purdue, I mean, they've they've got an inside game. They're a tough team. They've got a, you know, they're good defensively against field goal shooting. That's their game. You would think they are going to stay big as long as they can in this game. I would say for the Hoosiers, what we've seen in a couple games in particular in the Big Ten season, what matters to them the most is not having a disappearing act from Troy Williams. Because
you need everybody. That's
I understand that. I don't want to pick on Troy only, but he's such a matchup nightmare himself. I think he gets lost in this Colin Hartman's our center thing, but athletically, he's so good getting to the basket that if he disappears for long stretches of time, it really hurts.
Well, and the Boilermakers don't mind that one bit because, number one, if he is healthy and fine, they have 10 fouls to give at the rim with 7'2" Isaac Hoss. Right. He's 297. I said 300. Sorry to his folks.
Mr. Hoss or Mr. Hammonds?
On that one, Mr. Hammonds is 261. Yeah. I said he was 285. So we're in the ballpark. That's the point. Purdue's the only team in the league in the top five in field goal defense and field goal offense. How about that? They've allowed just one Big Ten team to score 70 points in a game. That was Penn State, and that was in overtime. It's 67 in regulation. So Purdue field goal percentage defense is second, only allowing 38%. They do 44.5% on the offensive side. So there you go. It's not a big team that's going to knock down a bunch of shots. It feels like they're more of a slashing team that gets after. You don't see a lot of heavy guard play from
in
Purdue.
Big Ten games. I mean, they're not much worse shooting it than we are, at least from out, you know, from the whole field, and their tops in field goal percentage defense.
So. Nope, and Purdue's very similar in Indiana as well. They don't have a guy that's going to go out and get you 25 a night. They've got a guy that they've got balance. They've got guys averaging 10-7, 10-2, 9-8, 8-7. That's four of their five.
What they don't do is hit from outside. So I think for Indiana, the question is, do you zone it up if they go big, and you're assuming Purdue will start and go big for as long as they can?
Indiana's going to need all the fouls they can get as well. It's going to. I'm still on this game as if Indiana gets out and gets ahead, Purdue's going to have to adjust to what they do. If Purdue starts setting the tone and setting the tempo, Indiana's going to have to adjust to their inside game and that. And Purdue's at home, and the team that always plays at home seems to have the advantage in the league play. You get the whistle, everybody's fired up. Hey, Purdue sent out a press release this week on Tuesday saying their game was sold out. Press release. Those are facts. Again, you don't like them, do what you want with them. But you know what? This is their bowl game, for lack of a better term. It's their bowl game this year. They've got injury problems as well. Kendall Stevens has a broken finger, I believe it is. Is he going to play? Can he shoot? Mm-hmm. He's one guy that can shoot it from outside there. Basil Smotherman's more of a slasher. You've got Dakota Matthias. Yeah, he can kind of shoot it, but they haven't put a lot on him. He's only started three games this year. So, again, Purdue's going to grind it. They don't want a game in the 70s and 80s. They don't play in there. They've played there once, and it was an overtime. So they're going to be careful with their possessions. They're going to get after it. And Painter and the guys beat Iowa on the weekend. They beat a ranked team in their building. Mm-hmm. And Iowa, again, they go up and down. Aaron White got hurt in that game. Iowa destroyed them on the glass. Purdue has given up 40 offensive rebounds in their last two Big Ten games. I think they've won both of them. How do you do that? Well,
they played Wisconsin real tough and held them down defensively. You know they can defend.
That's the thing. They want to grind. They want you late in the clock taking bad shots. And to be fair, Indiana has struggled with that at times, not at home, more so on the road. So the matchups are going to be interesting. And again, Hartman's going to like a matchup against 6'11", a 7-foot A.J. Hammonds more than he's going to like it against 6'4", Jayshon Tate or whatever that guy is. Why he's quicker and faster than him. But here's what's going to happen in this game. Is there plan B for Indiana? Is Indiana going to be really focused on getting the ball to the basket to take it into the teeth of that defense? Or are they going to settle for jump shots? No, the point is, it has to move, and multiple guys have to move it. If it's going to sit out and watch Yogi dribble for 20 seconds, this team's going nowhere. In the rest of the season, it's going nowhere that tonight. Well, they have to move. They have to get into pockets of space. Big guys don't move quickly, so you should be able to string them out and get after it and be smart and take good open shots and make the pass. And who holds their nerve on the road as well? Yogi's been through these. Troy's played in one of these. Right. That's about it. And Stan, he's been so up and down off the bench. He'll probably have a great game tonight because he's had a couple that were off there. So the Boilermakers, again, they want to set the trap for Indiana to take shots, bad shots, contested shots, and they want to gobble up the rebounds, and they want to go to the other end, waste 30 seconds, get their best shot, hopefully make it, and if not, go back the other end, reset their defense. So what do? You try to beat big guys down the floor.
Right.
You try to get out and make some steals. Here's the one thing that just totally jumped out at me, the Purdue-Iowa game. Purdue had 6 turnovers. 6. That's it. Who doesn't force turnovers?
Iowa.
And Indiana force any either. So the Boilermakers had six turnovers in that game, and I don't think Iowa had much more than that. So, again, Purdue's not a team that's going to get up in you. They're going to play good in space. They're going to have good help side defense, and they're going to rebound. It's not a pressing, attacking style of defense. It's a very solid style of defense. And, again, giving up 20 offensive rebounds and winning a basketball game is unheard of. Olesheny had 13 offensive rebounds for Iowa in the game. 13.
333-2665 is our phone number. Let's talk about the matchup. I mean, as far as Purdue's concerned, do you see a scenario here? I know you mentioned if Indiana jumps all over it, but do you see a scenario where Painter gets impatient and goes away from the two big guys?
Not at all.
I mean, that's the most obvious advantage possible. At least, you know, if it works, obviously they got to play, but he's got to stick with that, doesn't he? I mean, I don't see him doing what like Ohio State. Ohio State's big guys are question marks anyways.
Hammonds and Haas had, I'm reading here, 23 points, 7 boards, 5 block shots, 9 of 11 from the field against Iowa, who has 6'9" Utah, 7' Woodbury.
They're big.
So those guys can play. They can get after
it. Did White play in that game, or did he go out early in that one?
White went out with a shoulder problem. I think he played into the early part of the first half, maybe. But again, Purdue's season high they got in that game in the first half was 34 points. That's not a lot. That's gonna their pressure does not come from their offense. Their pressure is good balanced
Aaron
defense.
White played 7 minutes.
What was the first half? All right, they're good balanced on defense and they get after and rebound. The one thing that Painter was mad about in this game, and I listened to his press conference afterwards. He said, "Hey, look, they went after it harder than we did. That's how you get offensive rebounds. It wasn't all these lucky bounces that got it. They were getting into us. We weren't getting into them. Purdue's a blue-collar. You know, they got their nerd board up there with the hustle stats and everything else. Well, that's how they do it.
Yeah.
They don't have brilliant shooters and guys that can beat you off the dribble. They got a lot of really good guys, but none of those guys that jump out and get you. And they have to do what Indiana has to do in the sense they have to be balanced. They can't put it all on Hammond's shoulders. He's shown he can do it like once a year, and once was against Indiana up there.
Of course.
They don't have any guards that go crazy, and it's not going to help them if Stevens can't play. He's playing 30 minutes a game, and then you know what? Then he gets a hand injury, and that's a one guy that could create a shot and shoot it from the outside. So, the Hoosiers, what I'm excited for them to see is how they take it on the road and not give up 80 points.
Right.
Because Ohio State showed the way to beat
them.
Ohio
State's a good offensive team.
They are.
Purdue doesn't strike you that
way.
No,
they don't.
But
if they're going to have the game of their season, they're going to have the game of their season.
We have made teams look a little bit better on the offensive end.
And you talk about Painter being patient. I think that's just that's just the same theory for Tom Crean. Can you have guys taking constant bad shots? No, that's what Purdue's going to suck you into. So you need some good decision makers. You need the extra pass. You don't need your head down going into the trees trying to draw fouls on these guys, because if you're out of control or you look a little funny going in there, guess who gets the break?
Right.
It's usually the home team. So,
well, that's the other interesting
part.
Did
you learn anything from the Ohio State game?
Teams that have been able to really be handsy with the guys when they have the ball, you know, they've gotten away with it. Nebraska was that way. Ohio State was able to do it all weekend. It's not that it's necessarily wrong, but you go from game to game sometimes, certainly home and away, it seems like, where, you know, a little bit more pushing and shoving with the guy with the ball is not going to work out in your favor when you go to Mackey.
No, and James Blackman gets absolutely no love going to the basket.
No, he
gets, and he's like 192. He's not tiny. I can't be reading this right, that Purdue got out rebounded by 15 and won their last game.
They
can't
did.
Be.
They shot 47%.
Right.
They're only
very
4
solid.
Of 20 on threes.
That's right. Let them shoot it. That's not
but
their
as you mentioned, six
butter.
Turnovers. Neither team had a lot of turnovers.
No, they,
19 assists for Purdue
on 25 baskets.
I tell you what blows you away: Isaac Haas in 20 minutes had 4 rebounds. AJ Hammonds in 20 minutes had 3 rebounds.
Yep,
that to me is the crazy part. I know Iowa's got some size to them, but seriously. AJ Hammonds and Isaac Haas are the two biggest guys in the conference,
they
aren't
are,
they?
But they're not the most athletic guys, and we always talk about what's rebounding. It's 90% effort and 10% talent. So, that's where Troy Williams can help. He can get around guys like this and use his quickness to get the boards use his quickness to get putbacks.
We've been out rebounding better rebounding teams this year because of that, at least here in the Big Ten. And if you're talking to me about 2 7-footers that don't like to rebound all that much,
they are minus 23 in their last two games.
That's crazy.
Prior to that, they out-rebounded 6 straight opponents.
And again, Iowa's one of the other few teams that does have some size. But that's a little crazy.
Purdue shooting 50 8% from the foul line, but here's the key.
Illinois's got no size.
51.7% from two this year, so make them shoot threes. Make them beat you from outside. Then you pack it in, so it kind of that makes some sense. I mean, if you want Hammonds and Haas to catch the ball down there, I'm not sure who Indiana puts a body on. They're going to have to – Williams is going to have to – If they, I would be really interested to see if they play two big guys to start with, just to see how it shakes itself out. Because you know Troy's not going to shoot any jumpers. You don't want Troy to shoot any jumpers, so you play off him and just let him go. This is going to be a fantastic chess match.
Oh, yeah,
fantastic matchup and how that works. The pace of the game, Indiana wants to go fast. Purdue wants to go slow. It's oil. It's water. It's black and gold. It's cream and crimson. None of this matches.
How does it work?
And yeah, it looks great. So it's going to be fun.
Who forces it on who?
9 o'clock. Big Ten Network, second of two. Penn State, Minnesota gets things started, so it might be a little late because none of these games take 2 hours anymore, except the ones where Indiana's not in the bonus at Ohio State and they don't shoot any free throws.
Let's get to predictions.
Oh, it's Indiana has to win this basketball game because if you want to, it's not the end of the world if they don't.
No, not
but at all. But again, you know it's home Rutgers at Wisconsin the next two, so you don't want to be. Thinking about Saturday afternoon, 3:15. Got to win this one. We saw last year when you got to win against Nebraska, and you got to win against Northwestern, you got to win against Penn State.
Right.
That team hasn't shown us yet that they can pick themselves up, dust themselves off, and get that easy, comfortable home victory and get ready for Wisconsin.
Look, what's enjoyable about this team is what they're overcoming, given what they don't have available out there, Tim.
Sure.
That's what's enjoyable. The question is, how good is it? In the grand scheme, or is it winning at home and against some teams that maybe are a little bit mentally less stable than the Hoosiers? This game intrigues me from that standpoint because it's a show me game for I think IU fans. They can understand losing at Ohio State. It's got some awfully good athletes. It's a good offensive
Purdue's
team.
12-8.
Yeah,
12-8. They've lost at home to North Florida.
I think
they've lost at home to Garner.
I think Hoosier fans want to see this win. It's not imperative. You've got games down the stretch you can win to be just fine in the Big Ten. But it's a show-me game for a lot of Hoosier fans right now who I think just said, look, we saw the crappy defense the other night. Rebounding was about a wash. Offensively, there was way too much standing around again, even though they scored 70 points. They want to see that corrected.
Are you ready?
They don't want to see Purdue go for 85.
They shouldn't be, and here's why. Purdue ranks last in the league in three-point percentage, converting on just 33 of 115.
Nice night for that 2-3 zone, isn't it?
287, at 29%. But the great equalizer in college basketball is, hey, only got to make four or five of them in a 10-minute period.
So you say Hoosiers win?
The Hoosiers have to win. I don't think they're going to win. That's the tough part for me. Purdue's a three-point favorite in this game, which makes you scratch your head a little bit as well.
Home court?
Yeah. The way Indiana wins is simple. This formula will not change throughout the year. Indiana must score 70 or more points. They must have four guys with double figures and two others around 8 or 9. When they're balanced, they're impossible to guard. You saw it against Maryland. Mm-hmm. You didn't see that against Ohio State, even though they got to 70.
If this team lights it up from threes, they've got an easy chance to win. But to me, the key becomes getting to the free throw line. If you get 20, 25 free throw attempts in there, you're getting into the goal. You're getting fouled. You're
that
getting
means
easy
you're making the right
baskets.
Decisions. That means you're playing through the paint.
That, to me, is the key.
I know how they should win. Can they win? It's Purdue's bowl game. I think the Boilers win 65-60.
There you go.
I hope. I'm not right at all,
I'll go with the Hoosiers in this one. 68-64 is the final.
9 o'clock
tonight, and we'll talk about it, of course, on Monday. But we're coming right back. There's a pretty big football game this weekend. Seattle, New England in the Super Bowl. We'll give you all the previews on that in just a couple minutes. Dave and Glass with you in the Zone. All right, you're back in the Zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL.
Austin Garage is a full-service garage for domestic and foreign auto repair. Austin Garage is located 1 mile west of the Redbud Inn. Don't say that fast.
Ooh.
Between Nashville and Bloomington. This is the email of the week, by the way. Email ErnieCanFixIt@yahoo.com.
Nice.
Easy to remember. Smart marketing. Good job, Austin Garage.
Yeah. And email Ernie for the heck of it. If he can fix it, he can fix it.
He didn't say what he can fix.
I got some
Ernie can fix it. Austin Garage, thanks for being on board.
Quick programming notes for you. Friday night, we do not have high school basketball because we're doing it Saturday night instead. Columbus East coming to town to face the North Cougars. John Callahan, and Terry Stultz will have a call. 7 o'clock Chalk Talk, 7:30 tip off for that. IU hosts Rutgers earlier in the day, 3:15 on the Big Ten Network. And then Sunday, we've got a ton of NFL football for you, as it is Super Bowl Sunday, Super Bowl number 49. Seattle and New England, of course, are your teams. The Legion of Boom against Deflategate. Coverage starts at 2 o'clock here on WGCL. So we got a whole ton of coverage for you. Kickoff is usually, what, 6:30, somewhere in that neighborhood?
6:30 is the target date, but there's always a prop bet of when they actually will kick
some
it
of
off.
That stuff. And, a lot of it here on for you on WGCL.
Yeah, it's great.
Again, starting at 2 o'clock, so at least four and a half
football
hours.
Football holiday, last pre-game. One of the year, so let's figure it out. 14-4 versus 14-4. The Patriots and Seahawks, the Seahawks defending champions, looking to be the first team since New England to defend their championship.
Yep.
So a lot of history tied in here. It's been the same old Patriots. And Seattle, again, this team started off a little bit rocky. Remember, they had plenty of injuries on the defensive side of things and got hot
Looked
late.
Uninterested for a while, to be fair.
They did. It's hard to get jacked up after you had to play it. You had to turn it up to 11 the year before that to win that game, and how they dismantled Peyton Manning in last year's Super Bowl had nothing to do with their offense. It had everything to do with the 11 guys on defense and their friends. And there's only been about six defensive Super Bowl MVPs. That was a defensive MVP last year. The linebacker named Smith, and I don't even think is he's playing this
I'm
year.
I'm not sure he's on. Yeah, he might
but
be on
not
the team.
But not too much.
No,
if he is.
two interceptions. I think in that game.
Well,
or
I think an interception and a
game,
fumble. He took one of them back for a touchdown. And when the defense, and that's the
a
point.
Sack or two.
That's the point. Yeah. The guy that in a 47-2 game or whatever it was, the defensive guy won the most valuable
player. That's how dominant they were.
But what does Seattle do? They want to do – Seattle and New England are kind of similar. They're not terribly different. They both want to run the football to establish that. And Russell Wilson, it seems he can do anything you want with it. You know how good Tom Brady is. So I think you start on the defensive side of things here, Dave. It's the Legion of Boom. They talk a lot, and they sure back it up.
Yeah, they do. They are a they are a physical defense. That's what's fun to watch about them. And they're physical in a lot of different ways. They're physical in just being physical. They're tough. They're hard. They hit you hard. They beat you up. Up front, they go after you with a lot of bodies and a lot of speed. They're not a huge, big defense, although they got a couple big defensive tackles. But they send a lot of good-looking bodies from linebacker spots and safety spots and end spots.
Find a
they
slow guy on that team. Yeah, they, try to find a slow guy on that defense.
They keep you guessing on where they're coming from, and they got a whole bunch of them. And that's what's interesting up front, because you've seen Tom Brady, you know, like almost every quarterback out there, you get pressure on him, especially up the middle, and he's going to get a little skittish back there. And that's exactly what they did to Peyton Manning last year, is they just absolutely threw the kitchen sink at him up front. Can the Patriots run the ball to slow down that crazy pass rush getting in his face is one of the absolute first things I look at, because that's what the Patriots have become. They've gone big on the offensive line to do it, and they've got Rob Gronkowski that can hit just over the top of you if you get too aggressive going after the run. So it seems a little bit too obvious with Bill Belichick and the Patriots, but it really does, to me, start right there, because if they don't, Seattle will exploit the heck out of that, and you might see Jimmy Garoppolo in the third quarter.
And the other point is Russell Wilson handles pressure awfully well because he has wonderful wheels. He doesn't make a lot of bad decisions. You don't see him forcing the football because he can use his feet to get out of a lot of problems, and I think that's a huge advantage that Tom Brady doesn't have. Tom Brady is
absolutely
stuck in the pocket.
And interestingly, coming off the worst game anybody's probably ever seen Russell Wilson play, certainly in NFL.
When all he did was throw 2 40-yard passes to win the
game.
And
then at the end won the game for him with some crazy plays, no question.
I saw a stat, and I was trying to find it, where it was a defensive Seattle matching up with the offense of the Patriots. And here it is right here. Boy, look at me. It's my lucky day. How they match up. The Patriots have – well, I just lost it. Anyhow, it's showing long passes versus short passes and how it's all defended. And the deal is, here's Brady's numbers. Passes thrown 40-plus yards, 2 for 8. Passes thrown 30 to 40 yards, 1 for 8. Passes thrown 21 to 30 yards, 9 of 32. So we're right there with almost 50 passes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Tom Brady's thrown 500 and some passes. Where does he hit it? 1 to 10 and 11 to 20 yards. So in that pocket, and guess where all the fast Seattle guys are stacked up, packed up, and ready to go?
Yeah.
So you've got the strength of New England, like you talked about,
right,
using tight ends, using quick outs, dumping the ball underneath the Welker and Edelman, or not Welker, Edelman and who's the other, Amendola.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got 6'7", Cam Chancellor, Rollman around, Earl Thomas right next to him, loading up guys. You got Sherman on one side, and the other guy. Well, that again, it's almost like the Indiana-Purdue matchup, Dave. You've got strength versus strength,
yeah.
And it's going to be the team, and it always happens this way. Tell me who's going to turn it over the most. I'll tell you who's going to get beat in the Super Bowl. But it's going to be an interesting thing because 2 weeks to prepare for this, Belichick always has something up his sleeve, whether it's legal, illegal, or whatever, doesn't matter. But the point is, looking at these numbers, the toughest part of Seattle's defense is right there in the guts of that middle where the Patriots like to load you up.
Well, what makes them so good, of course, is not only do they go crazy up front on the athletes, but they call it the Legion of Boom for a reason. And there's a couple of reasons, but they do. They are extraordinarily physical. And here's the thing.
Cool.
They are great physically on the edges with the cornerbacks, and they are great
rushers
in the middle. I mean, Cam Chancellor has been getting a lot of attention recently, and deservedly so. He's 6'4", 230, and he can run.
Cam Chancellor?
He can run.
He's 6 foot seven.
He's not 6'7".
Oh, look it up.
No, he's 6'4".
I'll bet you a beer right now on the airwaves.
He's
huge.
He's a guy that if you want to match somebody up, what the Colts did to take Gronkowski out of the game against the Patriots was put Vontae Davis, one of the best corners in the game, against him.
Yeah, I owe you a beer.
There you go. I know this team at least a little bit.
Right.
Now, help me out here.
But he looks massive standing next to those
Well, he
guys.
Is. He's about 235. I mean, he's David Fulcher size, if you remember him from the early
Bengals.
80s, from the Bengals.
He's huge.
He's twice as fast. That's the difference.
The
he can stick with Rob Gronkowski.
But
the question
is
he disciplined to not get sucked up into the run to do it?
Here's the interesting point. What did the Colts do to throw off Gronkowski for almost three quarters?
Well, they put Vontae Davis on him.
So does Richard Sherman.
Yeah.
Do they go that way? Because Sherman's bigger than Davis, isn't he?
I think the question there is Sherman's a physical guy. I'm not sure he's Rob Gronkowski physical, and he's coming off an elbow injury.
Exactly.
Earl Thomas is a 5'11 or 5'10 safety who will hit the living heck out of you.
Sherman's 6'3 as well.
Well, I know he's big, but I'm talking different physically. They
sure
are different physically. They might be both tall. And Richard Sherman is a physical guy against guys like Jordy Nelson and stuff like that. There's no question about that. Cam Chancellor is physical against tight ends. There's a difference. I mean, there's a difference in the weight and the strength and the size. There is a difference between the two. You have to have two different skills to be playing.
Rodgers
tried
spots to throw at Sherman. Didn't work out.
Sure.
Do you bait Brady into doing that? Because here's the other thing that I'm taking into consideration as well. You get pass rush on him. You force him to go to his target where your best cover guy is. That guy can make plays for you.
Right.
So it's going to, again, more of this chess match.
Yeah.
What's Carroll going to match up? Because Pete Carroll's not an offensive coach, folks.
Well,
he enjoys the defensive side.
Let's think about it last year, because there's a couple parallels between this game, not in the running game so much for New England and versus the Denver Broncos, but there is in the passing game, because what we all thought, I think, last year was they're going to throw a bunch of dinks and dunks with Peyton Manning, and they're going to beat you underneath because Richard Sherman and those guys can't keep up with the little water bugs like Wes Walker and stuff like that. Well, there's a couple water bugs on this Patriots team, but what the Seahawks did is they got to Peyton Manning so quickly he couldn't set his feet to even hit the underneath stuff. So are they going to be able to do that again against a Patriots offense, or is that offense going to get a running game going? Because everything that Seattle isn't necessarily a big physical run defense. They overwhelm you with their speed and their numbers in the run defense. Can they push them around up front is the huge key to me. Because I think in the back end, they're so good, Seattle is in the back end. I don't know that New England's just going to go deep all the time trying to exploit that, except with Rob Gronkowski.
Both of these teams have done a great disappearing act and then a great Lazarus coming back from the dead. Seattle did it at home. So did New England. New England's down 14-0, 28-14, 31-28 at home against Baltimore, and found a way to come back and win that game 35-31. Obviously, the Seattle-Green Bay game has been highly documented from here, and it should be. It's one of the biggest choke jobs in the history of
Seattle. Maybe
the history
shouldn't be here.
Well, you know what? And you always worry about teams that kind of get that little break, and you think, hey, well, you know, we're woke them up, and B, then you get the feeling and the confidence, like, well, we can't do anything wrong, so we'll see how it works out. But the key for the Patriots is going to be, can they run the football? Because if Tom Brady has to throw 45 passes, I don't think they win the football game. You can't without that balance against
not with that pass rush.
Marshawn Lynch in a 10-point lead.
Yeah.
That's something I don't. Brady's good, and he has drugged that team back for some other times in the Super Bowl. But with Wilson's scrambling ability and the way they can kill the clock, if Seattle gets out and puts a lead on you, especially late, that puts a lot of pressure on that offense.
So we've talked a lot about the Seattle D and the Patriots O. We'll flip that around when we get back from the break. 333-2665 is the phone number. Dave and Glass with you in the Zone. right, you're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Quick summary once again of our programming notes. No Friday high school basketball because we've got it Saturday for you. 7 o'clock Chalk Talk, 7:30 is the tip-off with Columbus East coming to town to play the North Cougars. So we'll have that for you on Saturday, not Friday. And then Sunday is Super Bowl Sunday, and it'll be NFL all afternoon and evening long, starting at 2 o'clock with Westwood One's pregame, leading up to kickoff around 6:30 or so for New England and Seattle. Going through the matchups, we've talked a lot about the Patriots offense, Tom Brady, and what they want to do against the Legion of Boom. That's the marquee matchup, certainly, but there's another side of this that gets forgotten pretty darn easily. And you got Russell Wilson, so you've got another sexy quarterback out there, a guy who can make some plays, and he's coming off one of the worst games we've seen him play as a professional against a New England defense who's gotten better and better the last couple years. I wouldn't put it as their strength, but certainly they've got a lot of bodies they throw out there. They can give you a lot of different looks. How are they going to defend Seattle becomes the key here. One thing you have to keep in mind is Seattle likes to do some gimmicks, and Seattle likes to do some read option type stuff that requires you to be disciplined. And if there's a team that's usually, I'll stress usually, pretty damn disciplined when it comes to assignment football, it's Bill Belichick's New England Patriots. Wow. They are usually really good at that.
And it was the Green Bay Packers for about 55 of 60 minutes against then the desperation mode sunk in for Seattle. But the one thing, and the reason I bring this up, is what did Seattle do when they were trailing? They didn't make Russell Wilson throw the ball every time. They were handing the ball off with 2 minutes and 20 seconds left and one timeout.
Yes.
They had enough confidence in their line and in Marshawn Lynch and hit him out of the backfield with some hit him on the wheel route. If they handed him the ball, that's how they scored the second touchdown. He went 31 yards.
A couple of them were read keepers by Wilson.
Yep, exactly. Absolutely. So they didn't panic in the sense where they just threw the playbook out the window. And I thought that was something that obviously jumped out to me. So the thing about Seattle, you can't name their big time. You think it's Wilson, it's Marshawn Lynch, and what are you going to tell me? Doug Baldwin's a huge star on the outside. You're going to tell me who's 15? The guy caught the pass at the end.
Lockett?
That's the point. The point is New England can take some chances loading up against Lynch, making Wilson throw, but what do? Do you spy him? Do you keep a guy on Wilson the entire time? Belichick's going to come up with something. Guess what Bill Belichick does for fun? Let's see. He took T.Y. Hilton out of the game. And you can just keep going down the list of things where they've been successful. So, again, another wonderful chess match. But if you make Russell Wilson throw the ball more than he runs it, then if you're the Patriots, you have to like your chance, because that means Marshawn Lynch isn't killing clock. And guess what? When Marshawn Lynch kills clock, where's Tom Brady? Ain't on the field. Right. And that's the best weapon New England can have.
No, see, the interesting thing for Seattle's offense, of course, is what Russell Wilson can do. You know Marshawn Lynch can run the ball. You know the offensive line has got, they got a bunch of number one draft picks up there. That's what they want to do. So if Seattle's going to take something out of the game, you would think it's, let's see if we can slow down Marshawn Lynch in the running game. So with Russell Wilson, he's not a guy you're going to drop straight back and let him throw 50 times usually. What he does is he makes plays off the run look, and he makes plays by making some stuff up. Now, it's not total Michael Vick, let's get crazy type stuff. He stays within the offense, and he's usually looking to make plays down the field with his arm a lot of the time, and that's what makes him dangerous. He can certainly get down the field with his legs also. But to me, the Patriots have got to keep him bottled up. They don't want him running around crazy like that, trying to create some stuff. And to be fair, of course, Seattle would rather run the ball than see that happen too terribly much. It's an extremely interesting game for Russell Wilson, because he's been praised and praised and praised, deservedly so, for making big plays at the right time.
He just wins, man.
He nearly lost that game for him this weekend before he won it for him, essentially. That and the run game. Give the run game a ton of credit here. How does he respond now on the biggest stage? He's already been on the stage. So he's not nervous on the stage.
That's not going to
bother him. But his defense did most of the job for him
last
time. It
did, and who says they can't do it again? When they went into that game with Peyton Manning had an unbelievable year last year. This wasn't Peyton Manning who limped into the playoffs and willed his team to the Super Bowl. Peyton Manning, he did what Peyton Manning does, and they lit him up. And that's the interesting part. The other interesting part, you nailed it, is that Russell Wilson has been here and done that. Last year would have been the jitter year. He had no jitters to worry about. It's 2-0, 7-0, 9-0, 16-0, 23-0 before the paint's even dry on the field. He didn't have any pressure to worry about. How does he react? Well, he showed you in the conference championship game. They're down 19-7 with 5 minutes to go.
Right.
He showed you exactly what he does under pressure. And if you look at his record, and a lot of people don't like him, A lot of people think that he's a product of the defense or is a product of that system. That's fine. The quarterback does get a lot of credit, and he does get a lot of knocks against him. He doesn't lose to anybody.
No,
he does.
He's got a great record.
He's got a great record against big-time quarterbacks. He hasn't lost to a whole lot of them.
Look,
he's beaten Green Bay twice. He's beaten Brady.
How he played in that game last weekend is not to be – it's fact.
Right.
Yeah, it's fact. It's the way it is. But the key to what Russell Wilson does is when he needs to make the right plays and big plays, he seems to make them all. And there's a lot to be said for that, because the other side of this, too, is – that game was such a surprise how he played, because he usually doesn't play that badly in the first three quarters of a game.
No.
So you think he's going to follow that up with another one of those? If there's somebody that can confuse him, it would be this Patriots defense.
Yeah, and I think
he's going to play a lot headier than he did last week.
I think the play that summed up Wilson that every football fan looked at against the Packers in that championship game was 2-point conversion on the line to tie the game.
Right.
What is there, a minute 10, minute 15 left, whatever it is. Or not to tie the game, to give them a 3-point lead so a field goal would tie them, which ended up being the case. How many quarterbacks in that situation throw the ball out of bounds? How many take a sack? Threw it in a part of the field where at least he had a chance for a guy to make
a play.
There's
no returning a 2-point conversion in
the NFL. No one cares. How many guys are worried about, I'm not going to try. Right. He made a play where he said, I'm going to chuck it this way. And whatever happens, the ball's in the field of play. Something stupid could happen. I could get a pass interference penalty.
It was only around a couple guys rather than the crowded side of the field. It was unbelievably stupid looking.
Yes,
but it gave him a chance.
But it was smart because he didn't kill the play. Yeah. It's not done. And obviously Russell Wilson set a bunch of records at Wisconsin for pass efficiency and everything else. This isn't a fluke. This isn't a wow, where did this guy come from? No. That is the exact opposite of what's happening here with this game. It makes it look easy for Wilson because his defense dominates and his running back is wonderful and his line's really good.
But I've said this so many times about different quarterbacks over the year. He has the benefit of not having to make plays all the time.
Yep.
And then the question is, does he make them when he has to? And the answer most of the time with Russell Wilson has been yes. The Patriots will make him make more of those plays.
Could you imagine
will
how
he do it?
Would the Seahawks lose if Luck was their quarterback? I don't think they would.
Let's be fair. I mean, part of the reason they're in this situation is they've got a third-round draft pick that costs them $1.50 to put on the field, too, so they can spend their money elsewhere. Prediction
exactly
time.
Exactly right. Should be a good one. I like the defending champions to defend their championship. A little irony there on the Patriots, because the Patriots haven't won anything since Spygate, and with this cloud hanging over their head and Deflategate, there's no way I think they're going to win the game. New England.
I'm going to go for the jinx here. I think the Patriots physical running game. I think that can do it against Seattle's defense. That's one of the few things. Hey, folks, we got to head on out. We'll be back Monday, so tune in then. You've been in the zone.